is the UR Business Network.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Beyond Strong with Jessica R. My name is Jessica Regnanti, but in the fitness world, I'm known as Jessica R. I'm an exercise physiologist, certified personal trainer, and wellness coach that's on a mission to help you get beyond strong. Joining me in studio today to talk about eating disorders in your teenager is registered dietitian Joanne Sulman from Sulman Nutrition. Welcome, Joanne.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for coming in. This is such an important topic. So let's start. I want to focus the show on how to recognize signs of a possible eating disorder in your teenager. Why don't we start with you defining an eating disorder for us?
Well, there are several types of eating disorders. There's not just one, obviously, but they are broken down into different sort of subgroups. The first one being anorexia nervosa, and that's probably the one that people recognize the most. And that's just when someone becomes very restrictive with their intake with the intent of losing weight past the point of a healthy weight for them. So, they'll get to a very low weight that's not healthy for them. They have an intense fear of gaining weight, a real obsession with becoming smaller, and sort of not having any real concerns about their health at that point. Another type of eating disorder would be bulimia nervosa, and that's when someone would engage in binging behavior and then compensatory behavior such as purging or excessive exercise sometimes is used, or laxative abuse as well. And that would happen over a certain period of time. It needs to be at least 3 months of consistent behaviors to be diagnosed with bulimia. And then there's binge eating disorder, which is just binging, periods of binging without any compensatory behaviors. So eating a great deal amount of food without making up for it later, let's say. And finally, there's another group of eating disorders called OSFED, which is otherwise specified eating disorders, feeding and eating disorders.
Tell me a little more about that.
So that's sort of a catch-all term. It's just all the sort of eating disorders that don't fall into either anorexia or bulimia, they fall into OSFED. And so that could be someone, people who are anorexic, they might lose a lot of weight, but they might not get to a weight that's low enough to diagnose them with anorexia. So they their weight is too high to be quote unquote anorexic. That would be someone with OSFED, or someone who is anorexic but also is binging at times. That kind of thing can be sort of a weird classification. You might put them in the OSFED category.
So I know you focus a lot on eating disorders in your practice. You mentioned a rather high percentage
Yes.
of the people you see. What percentage is that?
In my side of the practice, I see probably 90% of the people that come through my door are people with eating disorders or disordered eating in some shape or form.
Do you see more of the anorexia nervosa or bulimia?
Right now, it's mostly anorexia, although it really can vary. Sometimes I go through a period where I see a lot of people with bulimia and then some people with binge eating disorder. There is a variety. But right now at this particular time, I am seeing a lot of people with anorexia. Yes.
So do you think there's more of a problem nowadays with anorexia?
It might just be more visible for people to see it because a lot of times people with bulimia are quote unquote normal weight. And so they might not visibly from the outside seem to have a problem.
That's a good point.
Where someone with anorexia, it's a little more apparent.
So who is this affecting? Who do you see?
It's affecting everyone. I think people associate it with teenage girls. And yes, I'd say the majority of those that I see are teenage girls. But I have, a 10-year-old girl that I see is struggling with it.
Wow.
I've had a 67-year-old woman who's struggling with it. I have men and boys that I see. So it really affects everybody. But yes, majority would be teenage to, in their 20s, females I see the most.
The 67-year-old patient that you had, was she someone that had never been treated when she was a teenager?
Yeah, I think, it's one of those things where dieting kind of, there's sort of like a fuzzy line with dieting. And so some people, can sort of get away with it, quote unquote, I'm dieting and this is what I'm doing, and maybe go undiagnosed for a period of years, and then it becomes more serious. And, obviously, I don't see a lot of older people with eating disorders because hopefully by that time they've gotten some help. But
hopefully,
yeah.
So why don't we start? What are some warning signs that your child might be developing an eating disorder?
Well, I mean, I think there's some, you know, obviously the obvious ones. So if they start restricting their intake, like cutting out breakfast or, you know, skipping dinner, obviously losing great deals of weight. You know, if you see that they're dropping a lot of weight very quickly, becoming more withdrawn and sort of isolative, that's another sort of, you know, thing that you can see, you know, just getting more anxious and upset and obsessed with their weight and their eating, and just sort of withdrawing from the world. That's a lot of the things that you can sort of say, like, this is a problem that's emerging. And also being really rigid with their food. You know, I have to eat salad for lunch. I can't have any other foods or salad. You know, it's salad or nothing.
Getting back to what you just mentioned with a good deal of weight loss rather quickly, that is a concern. What if a good deal of weight gain has come on rather quickly?
That could also be a signal of an eating disorder. It could be someone struggling with binge eating disorder, or it could be, you know, bulimia. You know, bulimia isn't always the best weight. I mean, it's not, doesn't mean that you're just going to stay normal weight or get, you know, smaller. You might also gain some weight. So, but I'd say checking in with your doctor to see, you know, if there are any major changes either way, that's a, you know,
there might be some concern.
Yes, yes.
So if a mom or dad is listening right now and thinks there might be a problem with their teenager or child, hopefully not a child, or hopefully not a teenager either, what's the first step for them to take?
First step for them to take would be to get them to their doctor. So to check in with their doctor and get a lot of tests done, you know, see their heart rate and their blood pressure. That's something that, even if the weight isn't necessarily a problem yet, the heart rate and the blood pressure can really tell you if there's a problem. So if their heart rate is really, really low, or if their blood pressure is also very low, that can signal, you know, that there's some malnutrition going on. So that's really important. And then having them get hooked up with an eating disorder specialist would be the next step. Yeah, with me, like me, or with a doctor who specializes in eating disorders. You know, that's really the first step, is getting a doctor who specializes in eating disorders, because they know all the ins and outs. And then also a therapist. So finding a good therapist who specializes in eating disorders, and then a dietitian to follow as well. So that, I think, you know, having a good team is really the most important thing.
I remember you mentioned that team approach in a previous conversation we had. Who is on your team?
So the team can be a variety of people. Obviously, the eating disorder physician is the number one. You want to have a good therapist who specializes in eating disorders, a dietitian, you know, obviously, who's also an eating disorder specialist. And then you might have people like a psychiatrist if they're prescribing medication. They could be doing therapy with them as well. Obviously, the parents, you know, are on the team, and they're a very important part of recovery as well. And sometimes the school gets involved. So, you know, sometimes having the school guidance counselor being involved, or the coaches on the teams, you know, being involved, it really needs to be a collaborative effort.
I know I've mentioned to you in the past that I work with tons of teenagers, and I've worked with a lot of kids that do struggle with their weight, and the mom or the dad is quite concerned about weight coming on. They do not want to create any kind of an eating disorder or any kind of disordered eating pattern in general. What is something for them not to say?
Well, there's probably a few things that they could avoid saying, and that would be, first of all, focusing on the weight. I think any hyper-focus on the weight can lead someone to be overly concerned with it, and could, you know, obviously lead to dieting and then possibly developing an eating disorder. So, you know, not either commenting on your child's body or on your own body. That's a big one. Kids observe everything, and they, you know, take on what you say. So if you say, "Oh, I can't believe I ate so much. I'm such a fat pig."
I've seen that before.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, you know? I've seen a lot of, even just at the grocery stores and
exactly.
Observing parents.
Exactly. Or like, no carbs, you know, from now on. Or, you know, when you diet, when you speak negatively about your body, your kid hears that. And they start to think, well, there's probably something wrong with my body too. So really nixing the negative body talk about yourself, and more importantly, about your child. You know, focusing on healthy behaviors, not focusing on the weight. So eating enough fruits and vegetables, getting enough lean protein and healthy fats and carbs, because yes, you do need carbs. And obviously being very physically active, which you know very much about.
Right. That I do.
Those are the things that I would say to focus on to make sure you're, you know, you're all healthy, but not to focus on the weight because then it can become an obsession.
Yeah, I heard once we become the average of the five people that we spend the most time with. Mm-hmm. So, of course, our children are modeling what we do.
Exactly. So if you have good behaviors, if you model healthy behavior, they're more likely to follow it.
So you mentioned earlier that you work with boys and girls. Mm-hmm. What percentage would you say?
Well, I mean, I think it's probably pretty obvious the percentage of men and boys with eating disorders is much, much lower than women. I think it's something like 10% of those with eating disorders are men, 10 to 15%, according to the National Eating Disorder Association. But, you know, there's probably more because, you know, there's such a stigma attached to eating disorders, yeah. Especially it's considered a girl's disease, that a lot of boys go, you know, hide their disorder for a very long time until obviously it needs to be treated. But yeah, I do see some boys and some men, and they struggle with the same things. It's, you know, it's hard to be a boy and a man in this society. You need to be lean, you need to be cut, you need to be jacked, you know, and so it's much more about looking physically, you know, like an Adonis.
It sounds like it's harder to recognize in your teenage boy then.
It might be, yeah, because you're not expecting it. It's not something that's very common in teenage boys. And so you just might, you know, oh, yeah, he's just cutting some carbs out because he wants to be better on the wrestling team, or, you know, he wants to run faster for track. You know, it's a lot easier to look the other way and think there's nothing of it. But, you know, boys struggle with this too. So
again, you're just looking for patterns mm-hmm. in your teenager's behavior.
Yeah.
And if he's skipping one meal, it might not be a big deal. Maybe he already ate a good lunch.
Right.
But if you see this time and time again, that's when a parent should start to become concerned.
Yes. So if it becomes a real pattern of you notice that he's cutting this and cutting that, and he used to eat a lot of different foods, and now he only eats, you know, chicken breast and vegetables, that's something to keep an eye on. You know, I would keep an eye on that. It could turn into something. So, yeah, there's a lot of sort of hidden signs and symptoms that you might want to be alerted to.
So why don't we – I mentioned earlier that I do work with a lot of teenagers. I work with a lot of 15, 16-year-old girls that are struggling with their weight. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, kids have so much stress mm-hmm. in their lives. So if someone knows what they're supposed to be doing, of both the parent and the teenager is on board, they know what they're supposed to be doing – and the stress is just they're having problems with stress eating. What tips can you give this parent and daughter?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing would be to help them manage their stress. So, and that could be hooking them up with a good therapist. I really think a therapist, even more than seeing a dietitian, is much more important when dealing with stress eating.
I can see why you need a team approach.
Yeah, it's really true. You know, helping them maybe perhaps through meditation or doing yoga, or, you know, other sort of stress-relieving techniques, that is the way I would tackle that. And, you know, if that's the kind of eating that they're doing, stress eating, I would, you know, focus on, well, let's deal with the stress better. You know, that could be going for a walk, you know, exercising, or, you know, talking with a friend on the phone, that kind of thing.
And do you see situations like that where I know a lot of parents that I know have taken the kids to psychologists and psychiatrists to deal with the stress, and it doesn't seem to be helping the stress eating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it can happen. I mean, in that case, maybe, and, you know, obviously I don't prescribe anything, but right. They might want to check out some medication, you know, have a psychiatrist sort of recommend some medications that could be helpful. There's a lot of different ways to tackle stress. I mean, it doesn't have to be through physical activity. It can just be through, you know, different breathing exercises. I mean, there's so many different ways of dealing with it. You know, and also the thing is, the weight might not be a symptom of a problem. Sometimes you're just meant to be bigger. Some kids are meant to be bigger kids. They fall on the 90th percentile for most of their lives. They're not going to be a 50th percentile kid. So, you know, look at your genes. If you are a bigger person, you're probably going to have a bigger kid, and that's okay. You know, as long as they're being healthy with their behaviors and they're being active and eating healthfully, maybe their body type is just bigger, and we need to start changing our societal expectations and say, you know what, I'm healthy even if I am a bigger person.
So I know you mentioned earlier to me that health at every size is part of your philosophy in your practice. Let me give you a case study here. It's an 11-year-old boy. He is struggling with his weight, and his cholesterol is high. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a health issue. He started to see a psychiatrist, and he's going to a dietitian, but he basically is not having any luck, and it's making it worse. Then I know you mentioned some signs, that some warning signs. Obviously, we see that he might have a problem, and you also mentioned what not to say. Mm-hmm. But what would your advice be to this parent?
My advice to this parent would be get hooked up with a good dietitian, and really the work would be the majority of the work would be with the parents, not necessarily with the child. So helping the parents provide a good, healthy, you know, diet, not diet as in like he's going on a diet, but just good, healthy behaviors around food. So encouraging him to eat more fruits and vegetables, having sit down meals together. That's a big one.
Oh, why is that, Joanne?
Well, I think it's, first of all, it's such a great ritual to have with your family, to sit down together at the dinner table and sort of, you know, talk about your day. And it's a way to connect after a day when you've all been apart. But also it's a good way to model really healthy behaviors for your kid. And so together as a family, you can sit down and have a healthy meal together. And, you know, they're more likely to carry on those healthy behaviors later in life if they see them modeled and if they practice them at home a lot.
I guess that repetition mm-hmm. is everything in so many ways. And if you're having nightly dinners 7 days a week
yep.
and talking to your kids and having a nice relaxed environment while you're eating, I'm sure that helps avoid stress eating as well. Is that right?
Absolutely. And, you know, if we're talking about cholesterol for this 11-year-old boy, I would, you know, educate the parents about different foods that they should be, you know, using more often, and maybe ones that they should be eating a little bit less. So saturated fat is really the one, you know, thing that you want to watch out for when you have a high cholesterol level, but also taking the focus off the weight. It's not about the weight, it's about the behaviors. If they eat healthier, the weight will probably follow. It might not go down a lot, but it might go down a bit. So, you know, really focusing on the healthy eating, the healthy activity, and letting the weight fall where it will.
So you're saying that chances are what might be happening at home is, even if this 11-year-old boy is getting all the right information, then there's some mixed messaging going on?
Absolutely. I mean, parents will say, don't do what I do, you know, like do what I say, not what I do. You know, if you're eating chips and soda and, you know, not sitting down to a healthy meal, your kid is going to see that and they'll probably get to do it too. So you want to model really healthy behaviors and also be very, you know, positive about things and not watch out or you're going to get fat. I mean, that's probably the worst thing you could say to your child. So one of the worst things.
And now with physicians, I know that have the best intentions, that they are concerned about these children becoming obese. Mm-hmm. What can the physician say? Is there a better way to word things?
I would probably not talk about the child's weight in front of the child.
I see.
I think that's something that kids really pick up on, internalize. I've had a lot of my patients say they started their eating disorder when they got scared straight, quote unquote, by their doctor. So, you know, talking with the parents about healthy behaviors, saying, you know, and also if they're a kid, they're growing. They've still got to develop.
Food is fuel.
Food is fuel. You need it. You know, even when you're heavier, you need it. So it's just about, you know, focusing on the healthy behaviors, working with the parents more than really the child, because the child is just, you know, under the mercy of their parents for most of their young lives. They need to, you know, follow their parents' lead.
So I see why you have such an emphasis on a team approach.
Yes.
And in general, with parenting, just practice what you preach.
Absolutely.
Well, Joanne, we are out of time. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So if a listener wants to find out more about Suleiman Nutrition, how do they do that?
Well, we have a website that you could visit. It's www.suleimannutrition.com. And, you know, just check out our website. We have blogs and other information that you might find useful.
Great. Lots of educational information. Well, thanks again.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Beyond Strong with Jessica R. For my producer, Lauren Culp, and my guest, Joanne Suleiman, I'm Jessica R. For more information on how to get Beyond Strong, visit my website at jessicar.com. Thanks for listening.
Broadcasting from Woburn, Mass. This is the UR Business Network.